RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice.
Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you have discovered a podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on the various episodes. And I'd like to thank everybody for continuing to download our episodes and making us the number one Arrow podcast here on the web. This is a very exciting time, and this is a very exciting season, the season of heroes, as I've been calling it. I think the episodes just keep getting better and better. Josh, you're not liking them though, right?
I'm not liking them. I'm loving them.
There you go. Sounds good. So. Well, this week, we've got the episode that we teased last week. It's called Broken Dolls. What can you tell us about that?
Well, we're in season two, and this is episode three, Broken Dolls. It was originally aired October 23rd of 2013. It was written by Mark Guggenheim and Kito Shimizu. Am I even close there?
Yeah, I think that sounds good. Shimizu? Oh, good. Yeah, that's how I'd say that. Yep.
And directed by Glenn Winter. So just a quick rundown of what we saw. In the cliffhanger last week, yes. We saw Oliver was trapped. He was surrounded. But with the help of the canary, he escaped from the police to fight another day, as heroes do. Meanwhile, the doll maker, who is an extremely evil, dark, twisted serial killer, I'll talk about that later, that Detective Lance had put away many years ago, has escaped from Iron Heights, and now he's got his sights set on Quentin, now Officer Lance, right, and Laurel. And only the Arrow can save them. So we are now calling him the Arrow, I would guess, right? But
yeah, that's official in this episode. So
it is definitely official several times, actually. So
yep.
Meanwhile, Roy is tracking down the canary as per request, but he is not the only one.
Now, let me just say, we're calling her the canary, but that is not what she has been called. But, you know, that's kind of what we're led to believe she is, as Oliver puts it, the woman in black, basically the Dread Pirate Roberts, I guess, right?
she could be. You just pass it down, you know.
Could be. So, again, more on that in just a little bit. No real news this week. I could tease some of the upcoming episode titles or other information, but that information is kind of all over the web. So.
Yeah. You know, wasn't any news per se, but I got to tell you that Stephen Amell is loving the Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
And he posts stuff all the time. So if you want to just kind of keep up to date with stuff they do on the set, they screw around. He'll film little Vine videos on the set,
yes,
in the back lot and stuff. So if you want to keep up on stuff as it's going, it's almost like behind the scenes look.
Yep.
Of his day-to-day
kind of live
fun.
Too.
Yeah, yeah. And doesn't it look like he is having a blast?
Well, he had posted something. He's like, right before the episode aired, he was like, you know, hey, share this, and if I get 1,000 shares, maybe I can have a special video thank you from one of the other cast members. Next day, you know, I think after like 3,000 shares, he's like, well, okay, that worked pretty well. You know, it's just like he didn't realize the power of social media here, so... Yeah, definitely. Check him out. You can see and keep up with some of the Facebook posts that he puts up via our Facebook at Green Justice Podcast, facebook.com/Green Justice Podcast. And Josh, I think you're putting a bunch of those over on our page.
I do. I share a lot of the stuff that he puts up. So, and I don't want to sound like a gushing fanboy here or anything like that. But he does. He seems like just a regular guy, you know, just kind of that's having a lot of fun doing this show.
Yeah.
He's working hard. Boy, he'll tell you he's working hard. He'll tell you how exhausted he is. But it just seems like the atmosphere of the set is one of fun where people seem to get along. And I don't know. I admire that in people. So, and again, you know, I'm getting this all from his Facebook posts,
right,
and things like that. So it's hard to.
It's kind of PR, but it's also not, because I mean, you watch the show and you're like, wow, they really are having a lot of fun. I mean, that kind of comes through on the show. I think
it does,
because everybody takes a lot of pride in their work.
And I think people can tell when actors or somebody posts something that is strictly PR, or is just promote whatever they're doing, or maybe it's not even them. You know, a lot of times they just have an outside person posting as, right, as them, but it doesn't seem like that for him. It seems like he's really having a good time. So again, I don't want to sound like I'm gushing too much, but he's got some really nice abs too. But anyway.
Yeah, someone commented, it's like, are we going to get shirtless Amel every opening for the episodes? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's how they keep the females watching. It's like they tease with that. Oh, and then it's kind of like they get stunned. You know, it's like a little lure to put his abs in the beginning of the episode to keep everybody, you know, satiated for the next hour.
I use that to inspire me on you know, my diet and exercise habits. So works for me, too.
I got to tell you, I'm starting to do more sit-ups and stuff. I need to get a Jacob's ladder. Is that the
salmon ladder?
Salmon ladder.
Yeah, salmon ladder. Yes.
Got to get one of those. So, all right. So let's pick up kind of where we left off last week. The Oliver with Laurel, surrounded by, I'm going to say, a dozen SWAT members. You and I, we asked each other, like, how do you think he's going to get out of it? All right. So your answer was trick arrows.
I thought he was going to use a trick arrow.
Yep. My answer was, I wasn't quite sure, but then I said, well, it's probably someone else helping him, but I thought it would be Quentin Lance coming in, and I talked about how that would cause a rift between Officer Lance and Laurel, which did happen, but just not quite as predicted. But
yeah,
what we did see was... She asks him to put his bow down, asks him to put it down. He starts to put it down, and then right through the skylight comes the canary with what?
Her canary cry.
Yeah, man. I thought that was a brilliant way to put it into the show, have a little sonic device that blows out all the windows, and then she and Oliver jump out of the...
I agree. Now, one minor gripe that
I'm sorry,
I can
overlook.
Did you
say minor?
Mine a gripe. And just one teeny little thing that just occurred to me as it was happening that I just kind of went, huh. Why didn't Oliver go down with the canary cry?
Right. I was kind of thinking, it's like, you know, okay, so I was looking with this, when I watched the episode a second time. You saw Laurel and a couple of the other officers like plugging their ears, and I was looking to see, does Oliver like have his hands up inside of his hood? But no. So
that would have looked kind of funny too, actually.
Yeah. So, but I mean, that's pretty minor, like you say.
It is, and out of everybody in the room, I would say if anybody could take it, he could.
Right.
So, I like I said, I can overlook it, but it was just one thing I thought of, like, well, I don't know about that, but
yeah.
Hey, it worked just fine. He escaped.
And we get to see the canary coming back later in the episode, as you mentioned. Roy goes out looking for her, and she keeps asking him if he's one of them. I'm sorry, what'd you say? And then she smacks him in the head with her staff, and which is, you know, it's a great way to get people to continue responding to you, is just keep smacking him in the head. But
I'm not allowed to use that as a teacher.
Not as a teaching tool?
No.
Yeah,
no,
it's kind of frowned on now, isn't it, in the 21st yeah. century. But my question is, so we find out from the information that Felicity and Roy dig up on this mysterious woman in black with long blonde hair and the sonic thingy, as Oliver calls it, that she's basically going after men who are assaulting women. So men who have raped women, or as we saw in the previous episode, men who are trying to assault a woman on her way to or from work. And that's kind of the criminal element that she has chosen to fight against in her own sort of, you know, let's just call it what it is. It is sort of vigilante territory based on, you know, what I think we saw Oliver doing last year as the Hood. Right? Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So my question is, why is she coming in and saving Oliver at the beginning of the episode? Because that is the only element that doesn't fit her MO.
Well.
She saves him. You know, they jump out the window, and then she does that amazing, I'm guessing wire-aided, but parkour stunt up the wall onto the fire escape and off into
parkour
the
alert. Yeah. Girl, parkour alert.
There was also parkour in a parking lot, which is a kind of a pun in itself, I guess.
Parkouring lot.
Parkour, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think there is a way that it fits her MO.
Okay.
Shall I say?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's not beat around the bush here.
Well, my theory, and I'm not the only one that has this theory. I don't claim credit to have come up with this, but my theory is that the canary is Sarah Lance.
Hmm. Yeah, it seems to be a very popular theory. The only thing, and I agree with that. I think that is a great theory because I think it fits with everything that we've seen so far. Different actress than played Sarah in the pilot.
Yes.
But again,
yes, I noticed that too.
That was the pilot. So, you know, let's not, you know, and it's five.
And it's something that you could easily get around since you really just saw the side view of her face. I think her face was in that shot in the bed, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, sir, it was.
Oh, okay. All right.
And, my eyes are up here, you know. Come on.
And then her just kind of falling out of the boat. I mean, that was most of what you saw. So really,
it was a quick shot, right.
And I hate to say this, but I don't really remember even what she looks like. So it would work for me.
I mean, she had brown hair and stuff like this, but you know, in, historically, Black Canary wears a wig. So that's not a problem. But yeah, I mean, a different actress and stuff like this, but you know, it can be explained. It's 5+, maybe 6 years after the accident. Now, she's gone through a tremendous amount of physical training.
So is Oliver,
right? So, well, and he kind of looks the same, but I could see where you might think that he's a different person and stuff. But Canary is. What?
His hair looks better.
Yeah. I like his hair better now instead of that kind of ratty wig that he wears on the island. But Canary being sought after / trained by the League of Assassins, which is wow. I mean, I didn't know they were going this far. This is really cool. And they even name drop Ra's al Ghul. Who's to say that Liam Neeson might not show up later in the season? That would be cool.
I think that would be cool. I would like that. I'm not sure how I feel about the Ra's al Ghul story or reference, but I don't know. If Liam Neeson was there, I could probably be easily convinced.
Yeah, it's not. And it's not, you know, necessarily going to be the same as we saw it in Batman Begins and no. The same kind of group. The League of Assassins is a group that shows up in a lot of different DC comics, primarily in Batman because that's and Detective Comics because that's where Ra's al Ghul was invented, I guess. But you know, it's shown up in Green Arrow and it's shown up in Black Canary. You know, similar titles and stuff like that. You know, it kind of makes sense. You know, you get shipwrecked and he ends up on this island where we don't know. I mean, there's also, you know, there's three and a half other years here worth of island stuff that's happened. And we don't know that he doesn't encounter the League of Assassins in some fashion. And maybe he learned some of his tricks of the trade from there. But we know that.
Well, and based on the end, the flashback scene at the end with the boat, he's not necessarily on the island anymore.
Right. Though he will have to go back at some point. But yeah, that's a good point.
He does.
But we know that Malcolm Merlyn was trained in the in these Arrow techniques. I believe he had mentioned the League of Assassins at one point, if I'm not mistaken. But he also mentioned he was trained in Nanda Parbat, which is some sort of supposed to be like Middle East, or not Middle Eastern, but like Eastern, Far Eastern country. You know, kind of like a Tibet area or something like that, mystical country. And he, you know, wears the Dark Archer clothes that look very much like the clothes that the gentleman in this episode wore when he confronted Canary up in her belt tower.
Did you think that might have been Merlin?
I actually thought it was Oliver at first. Well, yes, sorry. To answer your question, yes, I did think it was Merlin, because at first I thought it was Oliver, because she says, you shouldn't have come here, and it's this hooded figure, and you're like, oh, yeah, well, obviously it's Oliver, because he's been tracking her down. And then the Dark Archer steps in and has the Dark Archer voice, and I'm like, what is going on? And then, of course, they reveal very quickly that it's a Chinese gentleman who is coming to take her back to the League that is missing her, I guess. So
they're missing her. What? Has anybody seen Canary?
Yeah. She flew the coop. But, it would be very possible for her to have been, you know, rescued or, you know, floated to a different island or something, or come under the control of the League. And, you know, they adopt her and train her in the ways. It reminds me similarly of the Elektra storyline from Daredevil with the Hand. That's from Marvel Comics. They're a similar group, kind of a ninja assassins, and they trained Elektra, who was kidnapped or kind of brainwashed into working with this group and to go after and fight Daredevil. So there's a lot of cool things that they can obviously do with this storyline. We got an email in from David, who has a very similar point. He goes into some much more detail about it, even invoking the fact that the Lazarus Pit might have been used, which is Ra's al Ghul's his immortality device that he uses. It looks like a pit of lava or goop or something like that, that he gets lowered in and can remain immortal. And he uses it on himself and other members of his group to help out. So
that one could be. It doesn't fit the show so far, what they've planned so far. But, you know, they're also going closer to the Flash, too. So it's not to say that that's out of the question.
Right. And you could easily have something called, like, the Lazarus Solution or something. You know, it's like some drink that they have to drink that's, you know, made from some kind of, you know, something found on the island, some plant, and it grants people rejuvenative powers or something like that.
I think I've seen that infomercial late in the week.
So I think we are all under the assumption that it is probably Sarah, and it should be also noted. I think David pointed this out in his email to us. She's not being called Canary or Black Canary yet, and he believes that she will not be called that until some tragedy befalls her, in which case Laurel will also find out that it was Sarah, and Laurel will take up the mantle to become this character and use the term Black Canary as a sort of an honorific to honor her sister and stuff, due to the fact that her sister had that canary that they talked about in season one, where, you know, we were talking about, oh, you know, nice little tie in here that she had a sister that had, you know, this canary. Wow. And all those kind of things like that. So
just that one little explanation, I felt like the whole end of the season's been spoiled.
Ta-da! All right, so we don't have to watch now, because that's how it's going to play out. So
now I want to see how it happens.
You know, the great thing is, I hope that it doesn't do that, honestly, because so far it seems like a lot of things I've predicted about the show, they are already going, well, that's what the fans are thinking, that's what they're wanting, so we're going to do this. And they go one step further, and that's what I like about this show. It's just, it continues to take that step. We've talked about how things, you know, move very fast. I'm thinking they're actually moving maybe just a scotch too fast, because last week Laurel was totally against the hood. Man, she wanted to bring him down and stuff. And this week she's kind of come to a resolution with that. Well, maybe it's been 2 weeks because the first season opener, she was kind of in that place too.
But you remember what I said? I think it was last week how I was feeling about Laurel and her attitude toward that. I'm glad. I'm glad they did that.
I thought this was some of the best acting Katie Cassidy's done on the show. I mean, I'm honestly believing that some of the acting that she's been putting into Laurel is actually the characterization she's chosen for Laurel, because after Laurel is freed from the bonds of the doll maker, literally, she also becomes freed from her kind of her guilt, the bonds of her guilt, you know, in a figurative sense. She just kind of breaks down. All of her walls collapse from that experience, and she, you know, she and her dad kind of reconnect.
Hey, don't say walls collapse around Laurel. That makes me.
Oh no! Too soon. Oh, good. I didn't even pick up on that one. So, you know, it was a really powerful scene, and I'm like, wow. Now this is the level of emotional commitment that we should be having with these characters. You know, and here we are only third episode in. That's a lot. That was some really powerful stuff, but you know, I really enjoyed that. I thought that was really cool.
I did think, yes, I liked that much better than how they were portraying her in the first couple episodes. I wasn't a fan. So I like that. Now she's kind of going the other way. Hopefully she'll see the error. Now I don't know how she's going to convince the district attorney now that, you know, I'm not really going to go after this guy.
Yeah.
Anymore.
Were you about to say she's going to see the arrow of her ways? I heard you were about to say that.
If we could edit that in, that would be great. I would.
But I think this is a great this dynamic that we got in this episode between Laurel and her father is great because it's the exact opposite of the dynamic we were having throughout the first season, where she was helping the Hood as he was known then, and Detective Lance was the one out with kind of a solid, you know, one-track mind to bring him down, and that's what we're getting the opposite of now. Officer Lance is helping, and she's kind of got the one-track mind to bring him down. Officer Lance gives him the moniker the Arrow, finally, and, you know, it's just the way they explain stuff here. It's just, you know, the character, you know, says, well, he's the Arrow, and she's like, well, why are you calling him that? And he's like, yeah, it just seems more fitting than the Hood, because he understands so much more now. I mean, they've had a meeting of the minds, and they agree. And obviously, I think Lance, having been demoted, he's kind of that. I always seem to return to sort of the Batman Commissioner Gordon, or, you know, Officer Gordon stuff. You know, he's the one good man in a corrupt city, basically, it seems like.
I like that the name came from him. I really do.
It means something at this point because, well, he was the one that gave him the moniker of the Vigilante or the Hood as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'll tell you, I think there was a little bit too much partnership between Lance and Arrow.
It did seem like that's kind of, I think, where I'm seeing that it's kind of going a little too fast.
Yeah,
it was fun.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't. I mean, it wasn't too bad, but it just. I mean, he spent almost so much time with him. It almost seems like he would have picked up on who he was. I mean, I can't imagine him even working with him. I can't imagine anybody not trying to peek under that hood a little bit. You know, when he wasn't paying attention or kind of.
Well, that's the thing. There's like a scene where they're sitting there talking, and then they kind of pan over to show Oliver. And he's facing us, like he's facing the camera, so his back is to Lance most of the time.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I think there was that kind of tension. This brings up a good point, and we were having this discussion at work. So Lance knows Felicity from season one when he discovered that someone broke into the computer systems at the precinct. He traced it back to the computer in the IT department at Queen Consolidated, and he picked up and brought Felicity in for an interview, correct? Am I remembering that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So then And then Felicity leaves, and out on the street, Lance meets her again and just asks her some questions. And because she seems to know something, you know, he knows that she knows something and is working with the Hood, but he's not going to bust her. And so now he's found out basically that Felicity is a go-to person if he wants to get to the Hood, right? She's kind of the Clark Kent, right? Hey, Clark, I know you know Superman. So next time you see him, can you tell him that I want to talk to him, right? So that's what's going on here.
Interesting reference. maybe Felicity is his, you know, Arrow's secret identity.
You know, I never thought about that. He could pull off the heels, I think. But I'd love to see – I want to see Oliver go undercover as the damsel in distress in one of these episodes instead of sending Felicity out.
You know, he ought to. He owes her.
He does owe her. He owes her for a couple.
Let's come back to that in a minute.
So the first time through, I was like, okay, so Lance knows Felicity, and then he knows she works with the Arrow. Okay, so that's cool. And so he's gotten this face-to-face time or this chat time with the Arrow. But did he see Diggle? Because if he did, he knows that Diggle is Oliver's driver, right? He knows Diggle from that side. So if he sees Diggle working with Felicity as well, how easy? I mean, he's a detective, and he's not stupid, and the show is not stupid. So it would seem like he would make that connection instantaneously. So I would think he hasn't seen him yet. But then on my second viewing, when they're on the stakeout, and Felicity's walking up to, you know, she's gotten the last what is it, Mermaiden cream from the store, and she sees the guy that looks like it's the doll maker, but it's the false alert. We see Oliver up on the roof. We pan down. We see Diggle sitting in a car, and then we pan over from the car, and Lance walks around the corner and then is talking to Arrow via their comlinks or whatever. I would think he would notice Diggle there. Now, when they went chasing after the doll maker, Lance ran first, then Arrow, and then Diggle brought up the rear because Arrow stopped and talked and stayed with Felicity until Diggle showed up. But when you would think when the cops showed up and arrested Lance and stuff like this, Diggle would be around or something like that. So they're really kind of the show itself, I think, is kind of skirting that because they don't want to have those characters meet.
I agree. I agree with that. You don't want him to meet, but I'm not sure that Lance would have had any reason to be looking for him. You know, I mean, even if he did see him, I'm not sure he didn't see him going into action. You know, he didn't see him doing anything other than just maybe sitting in that car, right?
Right. And obviously, they wouldn't have brought him to the secret hideout and all this kind of stuff. But
yeah. So, but you're right. That's they got to be careful with that. I don't want him to make, you know, Lance looks stupid because he's not stupid.
Right. But and I don't want, I like the relationship that Lance has with Team Arrow right now. I think this is a great, dynamic that they have here with this because it allows for all sorts of cool stuff to happen. And, you know, he doesn't really want to know, I think, because he, you know, because he's working outside the bounds of the law, but, you know, he says that, you know, this is the best way to get things done. You know, and if the, you know, the police aren't going to do the right thing, then, you know, well, he's going to find a way to kind of skirt that line.
Yeah, you know, you're right about that, that him not wanting to know. I mean, that would make sense, especially, and that fits with this character too, is, you know, the less I know about this guy,
because he's already doing something illegal.
Yeah, know, the less I have to be involved in catching him, you know, the less it's better that way. But honestly, if they're going to kind of continue with this kind of a relationship, eventually they're going to have to let him find out, I think.
Yeah.
Everybody that has been that close to Oliver has well, not everybody, but a lot of people have found out so far. And Laurel's going to have to find out. And, I mean, I don't know. I guess they don't have to, but I think it would probably be better. And, I mean, speaking – and I know this isn't necessarily anything that has to go fit along with the canon of the comic book, but there's really no reason – by those standards that he couldn't know, because he's not even a character in the comic book.
He is and he isn't. There's a great reference that shows up that we'll talk about towards the end of the episode that links him back to one of the comic book characters. But no, you are correct. The character of Quentin Lance is not a he's not a character from any of the comic books. He is kind of an he's a new character, but he's kind of also an amalgam of some other characters that have shown up across the history of Green Arrow, which is
right.
Which is fun. So, well, anything else you want to discuss about in the either in Team Arrow or in the Lance life or in with Canary here? Anything else that's not like the some of the flashback stuff? Because there's some things we want to talk about with that.
I do want to you know, I want to mention first of all that like. I don't know. I guess it was okay that he kind of let the Dollmaker get away at first. I thought he stayed with Felicity a little bit too long. I thought he should have made sure that she was
Oliver.
Alive. And yeah, Oliver. And then let Lance take care of him and then chase after the Dollmaker.
Mm-hmm.
But good storyline, good action sequences. I like the character interactions. And just putting this out there for me, I did like this episode a lot, and I love this season is just blowing me away. But I think I should, you know, share at least because I have mentioned on the show about how I feel about the dark storylines and Dark Knight kind of ideas. Mm-hmm. I was very disturbed by the actions of the Dollmaker and how much they showed of the murders.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty creepy stuff. I mean, it's on the, you know, I mean, he is probably, well, except for the guy that was killing people on the subway train, this guy's probably more psychopathic. It's very Silence of the Lambs sort of.
Yeah. And I'm not putting the storyline down or putting the show down or anything like that. But for me, it was an uncomfortable part of the show. And, I think overall this series is probably I would be fairly comfortable with my kids watching. My girls are pretty young. They're not really terribly interested in it, so I don't have to worry about that too much. But my oldest daughter's 10 years old. If she was interested in it, or if I had a son that was interested in it, I think for the most part I would let them watch it with mm-hmm. supervision, you know.
Right.
But those scenes right there, I would not have been comfortable with kids watching it. And I know for a fact that there are kids watching it because several of my students this year, it's their every Wednesday they come in like Arrow's on tonight. I'm like, I know. So, so again, I'm not putting it down or anything like that. I get why they did it. And you have to have that seriousness of the storyline and a bad guy to show how, important it is for the hero to stop them as soon as possible. And you have to show what could happen if they don't. Oh, it was a bit disturbing for me. So I hope there's not too much more of that in the show.
Right. Cause I mean, he is a comic book based villain, but, you know, he's a more recent creation. He's not like a historic villain, like a Joker or Penguin or something like that. Count Vertigo.
He was just about psycho enough for that.
Yeah. So I agree. I mean, I thought it was an interesting choice that really with the first victim, they choose not to show what happened to the victim, right? We're seeing it all from behind, except for some close-ups of the photos.
Did they show the face just right at the end there, or did they even show the face of that first victim? I can't remember. Yeah,
they might have.
See, I have a hard time watching those. Ugh. But if they did show the face of that first one, it was very brief. And I'm almost okay with that. That's about where I would draw the line, but boy, it did. I tell you what, it made for a really dramatic scene when Laurel was just, you know, milliseconds away from the same fate.
Well, the second girl, the one that we saw him, I know we saw her face after the fact with like the stuff kind of coming out of her mouth. But, you know, she seemed suitably scared and screamy and stuff like this, but when we had those shots of Katie Cassidy on the rig with the tube in her mouth, I mean, she's like hyperventilating. She's like trying to blow back down the tube. I mean, she was doing
tears streaming down her face. And
scary. I thoroughly bought it. Beautiful job. I thought she did a wonderful, wonderful job on this episode overall. Again, and because there's been a lot of criticism, and I think I've leveled some of it out there, that, you know, her characterization or her acting abilities for it are relatively flat, but we got to see a lot more from her. I mean, she's been the damsel in distress before, but, you know, she took it to new levels, and I think it was a well-deserved turn for that.
Yeah, kudos to her. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, and one last thing. No more Felicity as bait. Come on. It never works out well.
She's a big girl. Safe. She can take care of herself. She volunteers. It's okay.
No more of that. No more of that. Volunteer or not, he should have said, no, of course I'm not letting you. Look what happened last time. Now we can say, look what happened the last two times.
Right.
It doesn't work. So no more of that.
The last three times, she got a bomb around her neck. She got busted at the club for the underground gambling club, and then this.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about the gambling club.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Okay. Yeah, no more. No more as bait.
Well, and then the next episode, she actually goes out. She decides herself, you know, nobody told her to do it. She's going to go out and get coffee for Oliver. And, of course, they're going to have a robbery at the Starbucks or something like that. And
well, that's not her fault. I'll let her do that.
That's cool. Okay.
Next time you slap a wig and a dress and some lipstick on Diggle, make him go out as bait.
Oh, that would be awesome. I could just see him going out and drag. I'm picturing
that's how he catches Deadshot.
Like the like Bosom Buddies or something like that. With him kind of hobbling along in these shoes that don't really fit him. So
okay, all right, we're going into that's a dark direction right there. Just
yeah. All right, so well, let's jump over to the island storyline. So we had a. Continuation again from last week with the finding of the Japanese soldier, the skeleton of the Japanese soldier, and they brought it back to their airplane camp. I'm still not sure I understand exactly the, and maybe I missed something, but I'm not sure I understand the exact significance of them finding this, other than the fact that, yeah, it's a soldier that's been here for a while and it's decomposed and it's just the body. Other than the fact that it's a soldier on this island that probably shouldn't have, he probably shouldn't be on the island, I think is the point, right? Is that what I'm supposed to take away from that, I think?
Well, and Shadow was going to try to find something out about him. She said she was, you know, kind of qualified to do that or something, but I'm not sure really what they were looking for.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how they got the skeleton back of the plane.
Yeah, it just showed up there.
Fireman's carry, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, possibly. And then, so they want to find out more about these, you know, these mercenaries or whoever it is that are on the island. So Oliver and Slade head up to the top of the hill and see this big boat that we saw last episode, or the episode, yeah, I think it was last episode, floating off in the harbor, and there was some other, I think it was like a little building, like a Chinese, I don't know, not a temple, but like a
pagoda kind of thing,
or yeah, what? You know, a house kind of thing, but whatever they would call that, it might be a pagoda on the island. But then we quickly are focusing on the boat as missiles start flying, and Oliver, this scene made me laugh, and not because Oliver realizes these missiles are being fired back at their base camp, basically. Uh-huh. But he goes, "What is that? Oh my gosh, they're firing those!" And that means Shadow, and he runs off down the hill. And I'm like, "And Owen, Uncle Beru, it can only mean one thing." I mean, I just saw Luke racing back to the farm, and it's too late, Luke. You've lost him. But that's what I think, you know, so he gets back there and of course Slade follows him and there are explosions going off everywhere and we don't know what's happened to Shadow. Explosions go off. Oliver, I thought they did a really nice job of running through the little shelling field and then Slade appears to be kind of blown up. An explosion goes off right in front of him in front of camera. Oliver has one go off near him and goes down and in his daze, you know, and he's kind of stunned and dazed and he looks up and he sees Slade on fire. That was kind of shocking. Slade's arms are on fire or his hands are on fire. Shades of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week, right? But we all know that he doesn't actually have the ability to cast fire. And then Slade falls out of frame and Oliver blacks out and then wakes up in, surprisingly, the hold of a ship that looks very much like a warehouse that was refitted set. But it's a pretty big hold in terms of like a boat. It's a stupid kind of thing to call out on the show because I think they do a good job, but it's like, I know it's a big boat, but because it's a fishing trawler or even bigger than that, maybe
that's a cargo hold or something.
Like a oil tanker or something like that. Yeah, I mean, it is supposed to be a cargo hold, but I don't think it would be, I don't think there'd be that much free space in it. I mean, it has this big expanse in the middle.
It did seem pretty big.
Anyway, but Oliver is now like chained up inside the hold of this boat. So, Manu Bennett promoted to season regular. Is he dead already? And we're not going to see him for the rest of the season is he just scarred?
He's got to just be scarred. And Shadow's, I don't think Shadow's gone either. That would, that's way too much of a punk way to go out.
Well, yes, but Shadow and Oliver had sex. And as we know, when you're out in the wilderness and there are psychos running around, having sex means you're going to die. If just look at Friday the 13th part, whatever. I don't know. I must have missed that in my
high school literature sex class.
They finally have this connection between them over the last couple episodes, and Slade keeps saying, you know, don't get connected because it'll just, you know, it'll be your downfall. Basically, Oliver saying my humanity is the reason that I do the stuff I do, you know, and I understand, you know, you have a different path that you walk, before he slips and almost falls off the cliff. But, you know, it would be a proper time. Like Shadow could be killed and that, you know, really could affect Oliver in a negative way. It could take him to the next, you know, level of his journey here.
It could, but man, they didn't show her at all. I mean, I know.
I mean, it does seem kind of cheesy, but I'm just, you know, I'm saying that it's a total possibility. I don't think they're doing that, because I think she's a pretty popular character, and I think it's an important character, important enough character, because it is based off a comic character. If it was somebody that we didn't know, I might think differently.
Yeah. I'm not sure where they're going with this and where he's going in that Gigantor cargo hold.
Now, do you think – so someone else had mentioned to me, they said, yeah, the boat's, you know, going away from the island, but – I didn't even really, I mean, it was moving. It seemed like it was just kind of trucking around the lagoon, maybe going over to the other side of the island. I didn't really think it was necessarily leaving, because these guys were coming to the island for some reason. They've got other prisoners in their hold. There are heavily armed mercenaries or, you know, something.
But whatever they came to the island for, they may have gotten
already
in the time that he was blacked out, or but maybe even before that, and they just saw him there. So I don't necessarily think that they have to go away from the island, but that was just it kind of seemed from the what do you call when you pull the camera back like that?
Oh, the,
at a distance,
yeah, the pull out or whatever.
Okay, yeah, that it did kind of seem like that's what it was implying, but maybe not. Maybe they're sticking around for some reason. I think he'll come. Come back to the island. I think he'll leave and then come back. I think there was even a comic storyline in one of the origins of Green Arrow that was something like that. Like he did leave the island for a while. And
okay.
I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have to come back to the island because he was rescued from the island. He had the full beard and he you know, shot the arrow. He seemed to be alone at that time on the island.
Well, so wherever he does leave, you know, they still don't have mirrors and razors and things like
right,
that. So,
right.
So he can't be going too far.
Yeah. So, but any idea do you have any thoughts about like what they've come for? I mean, we can pretty much speculate anything. I didn't know if you had a specific, thing you were going for.
No, it hasn't really occurred to me. They haven't given us much clue at all. I mean, I'm assuming it has something to do with those Japanese soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't, I don't know what it could be. I mean, all they showed was that little, what do you call it? The little rock thingy.
Oh, the hosen?
Yeah.
The arrow totem.
Uh-huh. Right. So that's all. That's the only clue we really have, and the fact that they're World War II Japanese soldiers. But I'm not sure what kind of a clue that is. So
right. Okay. Well, as we usually do on this show, the title. What last week we were saying? Well, I don't know how Broken Dolls necessarily is going to, you know, fit into the, you know, literal interpretations for the show, but. Gosh darn it, they did it.
I wish my prediction from last week would have been a little closer to what we actually got, but that's okay.
What was it? What did you said last week?
Oh, that he was
the toys, right.
He was breaking dolls or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so we've got this guy, the doll maker, who's you know, literally making these human women into dolls, but, you know, and Laurel was going to be the next one before he got stopped, and... You know, she is broken now, I think, just in terms of, you know, her spirit. You know, she had that entire breakdown and realized that she really was feeling guilty about Tommy's death, and she blamed the hood for it. And, you know, it's really her fault. Now, I think, of course, she's gone too far the other way. I think she's being really hard on herself.
Yeah, but it really was.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm just trying to be nice and supportive.
That's good. You're a good friend.
I am a good friend. And a good friend. But, yeah, you know, that's, you know, an interesting take on that. I'm just trying to see if it fits in anything with the island storyline, but I don't see it there, you know, other than...
Oh, not like, really.
Like we said, kind of a 1940s mobster. Yeah, this is my doll, see? So.
No, well, I don't think so. I can't see it unless, you know, he's affected by what he thinks is Shadow's death, but that doesn't
right.
really match very
yeah,
well.
Yeah, and we didn't get enough. I don't think we got enough of anything there, so. And, let me think just back real quick. No trick arrows this episode. No actual. Oh no, there were actual arrows because he did shoot an arrow into the lawyer's shoulder.
Yeah, that was. I'm not going to kill anybody now, but I am going to assault them terribly so they can never use their arm again. But yeah. he shot.
He shot
Mathis too.
Yeah, he shot him twice
in both shoulders. Right.
Yes. That's right.
Was a very effective way to stop him. Yet there was an even. More way.
Yeah, that's you know, unfortunately the canary does not have the same morals that you have taken on here. Obviously if she's working with the League of Assassins, so all right, well let's take the last little bit here of the show and talk about some of the references. I think I posted on Facebook this week that I counted over a dozen references, and I think I've got about that here. I was just It floored me, just the references kept piling up. Some of them seemed, there were a few that just like stuck out like a sore thumb to me, but the rest of stuff, I mean, it seemed really organic to the show and things that I think a lot of people, you know, who don't follow DC Comics would miss. So I want to run through these. Let me know if there's anything that you want to talk about as we go down these, okay?
All right.
So, Detective Lance, these are mostly in order of the show. Detective Lance's call sign as an officer is Delta Charlie 52, which is DC 52, which is named after the New 52 comics that DC revamped their universe with in 2011. They basically canceled all their titles and started up with 52 new weekly titles, some of which only lasted, you know, a few months, and then... They would bring a new series in. So 52 is a, if you'll watch this, because 52 is so closely associated with DC now, that's kind of their, I don't know. It's like there was a 52 week countdown, the 52 weeks in a year, you know, new comics and all this kind of stuff, are come out weekly. 52 is a big number with them. It also shows up in this episode with Channel 52, which is the station that, they're getting their news from this season, which is a little, I don't even know how to describe it. It's kind of a like a back page thing, like a letters page would be in Justice League, but it also is providing some sort of in-universe context to things that are happening. But they have a little Channel 52, comic portion dedicated in a couple of the issues. Also, the Dollmaker's apartment number was 52. So keep an eye out for
it's
that.
It's everywhere.
Yeah. It's not 42, it's 52. So, then, as I mentioned earlier, you were saying that Quentin Lance is not really based on a character. You know, he's an original character for the show, which is true. But we do find out his middle name in this episode, which is another great nod to classic Green Arrow characters. His full name is Quentin Larry Lance. So Larry Lance was Dinah Drake's detective husband, Dinah Drake being the original Golden Age Black Canary. In one of the many confusing origin stories of Black Canary, because there are several, because there's two or three different Black Canaries now. So that's, I thought that was pretty cool. Then they discover that the Dollmaker is using metamorpho chemicals as his hideout, and there's a van with the Metamorpho logo on it. Metamorpho.
I used to love Metamorpho.
What's that?
I used to love Metamorpho.
He's great. He doesn't really exist in the new 52 DC universe. There's Element Woman, I believe, is kind of has his place in the Justice League.
Oh, that's the lamest name ever. Metamorpho's way better.
Metamorpho's a very 70s kind of design. Basically, he's made up of different elements, and he's different colors. He's like purple, orange, gray, and all these blue and stuff like that. Every limb is a different, you know, one looks like rock, one looks like wood, one looks like rubber or something like that.
And, have a good haircut too.
Yeah. He was with Batman in his team called the Outsiders. So there was a series called Batman and the Outsiders. And basically, Metamorpho could summon up any chemical element. So if, we need to knock somebody out, he could, you know, make nitrous oxide and just push, or he could turn into water, or, you know, make himself into a rock or something like that. So very much, you know, in theme with the chemical company and the stuff that Dollmaker was into. So then there was also obviously Dollmaker. Like I mentioned, he's a relatively new character. He was invented in 2011 by an artist named Tony Daniels. And Tony Daniels was also the name of the lawyer for the Dollmaker in this episode. The Dollmaker is primarily a Batman villain and was in the Detective Comics series fighting Batman. But Barton Mathis, that was his name in the comics, so it's he's pretty true to his characterization there. And then we have the pairing of Cindy or Sin, not to be confused with the Sin Eater on Sleepy Hollow. If you're keeping up with that, that's a creepy looking dude. This is a pretty cute younger woman who is kind of a Robin style partner to Black Canary's Batman, if we go that route with it, you know, kind of a ward.
And did you notice they were hiding out, or their base or whatever was in a clock tower?
In a clock tower.
Kind of like Birds of Prey.
Yep, exactly. So if you read the comic or watched the TV show Birds of Prey, the clock tower was their base of operations, which in an interview with Mark Guggenheim this week, he said that actually just ended up being kind of a happy coincidence. They were shooting at this location that happened to have a clock tower, and they thought that would be a cool set. It looks like it's the Heritage Hall is the name of the building that they ran into. In the comics, Sin is a orphan girl, a teenage orphan girl that Black Canary saves from a group of, I don't know how you describe them, I'm getting just some like gangsters that are using her for, you know, whatever they need her for kind of stuff. And so she comes back to Starling City with Canary, and they work together on cases. As far as I know, in the comics, I don't think she has any particular superpower or anything like that. I think she's just kind of trained in martial arts and stuff like that, in the same way that Canary is. Yeah, I mean, she's very much a Robin-esque kind of character. So that's cool. As we mentioned before, we've got the Canary Cry, which is a great, a nice scientific way to bring in the metahuman trait of the Canary vocal cry that that Canary uses in the comic books. So that was really cool. And obviously, though, there were still some questions we had about that. References to, as we mentioned, Ra's al Ghul and the League of Assassins. Most people probably know about that from Batman Begins, but again, have been in Batman comics for a long time. Made famous by the Blood of the Demon, Bride of the Demon graphic novels that came out in the, I want to say, early to mid-90s, I think. Some really nice stuff there if you guys get a hold of that. Did you notice the name of Moira's lawyer in this?
I can't recall what it is, but you have it here.
Yes, it's Jean Loring. And Jean Loring is, in the comic books, the wife of Ray Palmer, also known as the Atom, a man who is a longstanding member of the Justice League and who can shrink down to the size of, an atom.
Now, I don't recall in the comics, is she a lawyer in the comics, just that the name of that character, or is she just his girlfriend?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I've only ever seen her kind of as the wife. So I'm not sure that she ever has a job in there, but
okay. I'm just curious, but
yeah, she could be
that lawyer. I won't spend much time on this, but as a character, as you know, I guess is in that part that actress had, seems like they're going to keep her around for a while. I mean, she had quite a few lines mm-hmm. and was getting real close with Moira there.
Well, so. I'm sure she's going to stay as Moira's lawyer, and obviously I think the Moira storyline for this season is her on trial.
Yeah.
That actress looked really familiar to me, and I couldn't quite place her, and then when I looked her up, she was on Stargate, the TV show Stargate, for a while.
Oh, okay.
And I'm just used to seeing her in, I mean, her hair in this was kind of, it's kind of whitish, but I think it was more brown, you know, whitish blonde, I guess, but it's, it was brown in the Stargate series, but, you know, she had it short and everything like that as well. So I'm sure there were other genre fans out there that recognized her. And then I think one of the coolest things that popped up was the name of the boat in the flashback on the island. The boat was named Amazo, and fans of DC Comics will probably know that Amazo is one of the Justice League's long-standing villains, going back to one of the very, very early early issues of the Justice League, created by Professor Ivo. Amazo is a synthesoid robot of some kind who can imitate the powers of the Justice League, and which makes it very difficult for the Justice League to beat Amazo. It's a very super strong robot that, you know, can pretty much do anything that any of the members can do at any time. I can't remember if it like adapts at the same time that it's fighting the members, or it has all the stuff programmed into it.
Well, strangely enough, another power is to adapt his cargo hold into a very large room.
Oh, well, there you go. See, I didn't even think about that. That's amazing. Amazoing. And then also Professor Ivo, one of his other inventions was he was a robotaholic, I guess. He made a lot of robots in his time. The Red Tornado was another one of his creations, which happened to be another member of the Justice League at different times, most notably in the 70s, basically a red robot that could turn into a tornado. So...
Yeah. You know, I had a Red Tornado action figure.
Oh, yeah? Did he spin around or anything?
Yeah, his legs did.
Oh, that's cool.
The legs spun around.
Dad, did you think he was a Flash? Because when I was a kid, I remember, like, why is the Flash dressed up so funny? He's got a cape now. What is that?
No, because he was, like, all red. Like, his face was entirely red, if I'm remembering right.
Right. I mean, there. You know, obviously it was it's different enough, but as a kid, you know, you're kind of looking at comics,
yeah.
You know, and it's like, that's weird. Why are they doing that? So, but I would think that Professor Ivo will be showing up on the show sooner rather than later in the flashbacks here. And I think, going back to, like, what do you think these guys are doing on the island? I think it's a habitat for the professor to carry out different robotic or human robotic hybrid experiments in sort of a Dr. Moreau kind of setting.
Ooh, okay.
So
that would fit. That would fit okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like this remote island, and you know, what better place to, you know, to do those, you know, weird experiments that you don't want your government or, you know, your peers watching you, you know. So
is this going to turn out to be like one of those islands like in Lost where you know, nobody knows about it or can find it, but yet there are dozens of people on it doing a variety of things.
Right. Well, we know people can find it, but maybe it's kind of hard because obviously Diggle and Felicity were able to find it, you know, and the pilot, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Sparky Season Joe or premiere, whatever his name was. So. Anyway. Great episode. The scenes for next week appear to be all Canary all the time.
Well, I'll break out my fishnets when I watch this one.
Did you see, I can't remember if we talked about this last week or not, or if I was talking about this with people at work, but did you notice the kind of the homage to the fishnets with the costuming for Canary?
I can't remember who said it either. If it was me and you talking about it or not, but it's kind of a pattern on her leggings or tight whatever.
Right. Yeah. You can. It's kind of hard to spot in the show itself, just because you know it's kind of dark when she's on screen and you know.
Well, I did a search of Black Canary's legs to find it to make sure I was ready for the show.
But you can find the kind of the costume. I think Mark Guggenheim tweeted a picture of the costume, and you can see the you can see it much clearer in the in kind of the front plan view of the costume and stuff like that. So. It's pretty cool. Any final thoughts on the episode?
You know, I really enjoyed this episode. You know, I had my reservations about certain parts of it, which I shared earlier. So, but it didn't diminish it in any way for me. This is my favorite series on TV right now. I mean, it really is.
Without a doubt.
This
is the one
so
I'm looking forward to. I mean, I'm watching a number, you know, I watch a number of shows, but like this is the one I'm kind of counting the days for, I got to say. It's
me
appointment
too.
TV.
I have triple checked now that my DVRs are set correctly to record this one,
so
I can watch it in high definition on a bigger screen TV than my iPad. So
yeah, definitely. Well, you know, everybody out there listening, thank you so much for listening and downloading our show. It's really heartening to know that there are other people out there that are interested in this show as well. Evangelize. Make sure to tell your friends about the TV show because I think both Josh and I feel that it's a great adaptation of the source material, and it shows a proper way that superhero shows can be done on TV without making them like super cheesy. And then obviously once you get people hooked on that, please let them know about our show because we would like to have everybody else listening. But like I said, we are doing really well, and I appreciate everybody, each and every one of you downloading the episode. I think that's great.
Yeah, it's great to hear from you too.
Yep. So yeah, and definitely please write in. Josh is going to tell you how to do that here in just a second because that is all that we've got on this week's episode of Green Justice.
So if you guys do enjoy it, please leave us some feedback, too. That's always really helpful. We love seeing that. But if you want to get a hold of us, send us an email at greenjustice@randomchatter.com. Or we got a Twitter, @greenjusticepod is our Twitter handle there. And you can go to our Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
Yep, and we've been having some great discussions on Twitter and on Facebook there. A lot of people posting just, you know, little reviews of the episodes and, you know, pointing out cool things. I know that I was not watching it completely live, and I have to be careful because when I watch the episode, I think I'm watching it an hour or two ahead of you. So I have to be careful posting stuff on our page, but I was kind of doing some live tweets.
You know what? You go ahead because I'm very careful about avoiding them until I watch the episode. So you go ahead. You post whenever you need to.
Okay. I got to get it out, man. If you guys enjoy this show, you might want to check out our other podcast that we do, which is called Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which follows the TV show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is also a fun comic book show that is in its first season, but it's getting better. That's also available via randomchatter.com. And, of course, if you're enjoying the podcast, as I said, please be sure to tell all your friends about it. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.